The latest episode of the Next 5 podcast is out now, and it's all about AI and creativity. I speak to Doug Eck, Senior Research Director at Google DeepMind.
Creativity is part and parcel of humanity.
YouTube creator Danny Vidari.
AI can give us humans new ideas.
And Neil Maiden, Professor of Digital Creativity at City University London.
AI creates a lot of opportunities. I think it's a great leveler.
Listen to the full episode of The Next 5 wherever you get your podcasts. Enjoy.
From the Financial Times, this is Hard Currency. Time to talk about Brexit again. But when will we stop talking about it, at least from a global perspective? Will Brexit develop contagious qualities all over the world, or will the rest of the world be able to quarantine the aftereffects of Brexit around the UK and maybe Europe, but no further? I'm Roger Blitz, and welcome once again to Hard Currency, the weekly podcast of the Financial Times on all things foreign exchange. Working out the potential Brexit contagion means looking into how others are reacting to it in China and the US as well as the UK. And with me to discuss all these issues in the studio is Michael Metcalf, Head of Global Macro Strategy at the financial services firm State Street. Michael, welcome. The quarantine issue, or the contagious issue, how much is this dominating market thinking at the moment?
I would say completely. I think there are a number of ways to think about contagion. The first way, I think, is to think about the economics of it. So there are some forecasts that the UK will now slow quite rapidly, perhaps even into a recession. I think the one thing that we would say about that is that it's very early days, of course, but one of the things that we track at State Street is the prices of goods online, which we aggregate up into an online measure of inflation. Okay. And the one thing I can tell you about that is that following the Lehman shock, which was different, but a shock to confidence, online prices in the States fell 1% in just 10 days. Now, the interesting thing for the UK is that we've got 10 days of data now for the UK, and actually we're up 17 basis points, which doesn't sound like a lot, but it's a lot better than a fall of 1%. So there's a first reading, perhaps, that the UK isn't as slowing, at least immediately, as people fear.
So give us some other data readings from post-Brexit. What else have you discovered?
Well, so the other thing the one thing that has changed is that forecasters have very dramatically revised down their view of UK growth already. What does that mean for the global economy? And I think there's an interesting kind of counterpoint to some of the doomsayers, if you like, about the impact on the global economy, which is that if you add Brazil and Russia together, they add up to around 4% of global GDP, which is roughly the same as the UK. It's actually a little bit higher. And of course, both of those economies contracted over 4% last year. Yes. The global recovery continued. And so the global recovery can still continue even if the UK economy weakens even as much as people expect.
The global economy has form in looking at shocks and their contagious effects. That's your point. I mean, so therefore it shouldn't have the same worry, if you like, about Brexit.
I mean, perhaps not. The reason why, of course, that we have this issue of contagion is that markets move faster than real economies. And the one thing that we have observed quite clearly in the last couple of weeks is a relatively normal symptom of crisis periods, which is that markets become systemic. They become narrowly driven. Correlations between assets rise. And certainly in that case, we've definitely observed evidence of that across global equity markets, that they've become more narrowly driven.
So whatever the evidence, investors are still behaving together in a nervous global way. Is that
absolutely so prices are moving together. The other kind of angle to it, though, and the kind of the important follow-up from that, is actually how investors react, because in crisis periods, markets tend to be quite illiquid and prices can move quite a long way without a lot of flow behind them. One of the kind of the curious things for us to observe is how have investors reacted to this shock? And so far we have just over a week's worth of indicators to show us how they've reacted. The interesting thing actually is that it's by no means blanket risk aversion. If anything, I'd almost say that there's elements of optimism there. For instance, demand for emerging market debt has gone up. Demand for other risky assets, risky currencies in some places has gone up. There's a lot of focus on sterling's crash and the knock-on implications and the weakness in the European banks in particular, where prices have really dislocated, investor confidence actually looks so far looks okay.
Looking at it another way is to ask whether Brexit benefits anybody globally. Do you hold thoughts on whether, for example, emerging markets might actually find this a benign monetary accommodative period in which risk assets can come back into play?
Absolutely. And look, I think in part, one of the reasons perhaps why the investor response so far has been relatively sanguine is that there's an assumption that policymakers will step in to prevent and backstop any bad outcomes. And so that basically means that in the developed world, rates are lower for longer. You know, Fed rate hikes apparently have been taken off the table. You know, we're looking for cuts in the UK. We're going to look for policy responses from the ECB, I have no doubt, and certainly from the Bank of Japan as well. So, you know, the idea that rates are lower for longer in the developed world just makes emerging market yields all the more attractive. And, you know, going back to that original point about global growth, if global growth just slows a little bit because of Brexit, then actually emerging markets are actually in a reasonably good position from this.
So what does this mean about looking at the currency channel to detect the after effects of Brexit globally? I mean, we are in the UK are obsessed with looking at sterling and its impact in the UK, but is it still going to take time for us to see the global impact of sterling through the currency channel? It seems to be that on from an FX point of view, nothing seems to be really moving other than sterling.
Well, it's fascinating because, you know, I think if you look at the Brexit reaction, you know, it's all been the currency, and actually underlying assets in the UK have actually performed quite well. Yes. You know, UK equities and yes, it's partly because the FTSE in particular is very international and it's waiting. But, you know, but gilts have outperformed as well. And in fact, actually, it was notable that that's how investors in general, large investors, the way they prepared for Brexit was that they bought UK assets and hedged the currency risk. And actually, they've been proved right. And so, you know, I think that it sort of makes sense that the currency is a very efficient channel by which to play, you know, potential shocks like Brexit. And, you know, it was also clear, obviously, in the FX options market that the FX options market for sterling was the only market really that showed a very high degree of preparedness for the vote. And, you know, so it's interesting to that extent. So, you know, right now, you know, the market sort of focus seems to be shifting towards, you know, the potential for political contagion. And you know, we've gotten through the Spanish vote, and, you know, the vote for Podemos didn't go up. So it shows that the contagion from Brexit politically perhaps isn't a straight line. But now everyone's looking at this referendum in October in Italy, and, you know, perhaps suggesting, you know, poor outcomes from that. And could that be another Brexit-like scenario where the Italian government potentially falls, et cetera, et cetera. Now, the interesting thing there, actually, is that the options market for the euro isn't so far showing no sign of a spike in volatility around October, no demand for protection, no skew for euro weakness or anything like that. So, you know, the market is talking about it a lot, but it's not yet there in the FX options market like Brexit was.
We've assumed that Brexit would create further Euroscepticism around Europe. The opposite, of course, may also be true, which is that actually Europe looks at what's happened in the UK with Brexit and says we're not going to have any of that, and that actually it's going to coalesce much more around the whole European project and the euro. Is that possible?
Yeah, and look, I think that, you know, the results of the Spanish election were one data point. I think we'll need to see what happens in the next sort of 3 to 6 months as to how the European authorities respond, you know, how they deal with the Brexit negotiations, and also as well, just how slow, you know, how quickly the UK economy slows as well, will also be an important factor in this. Is that, you know, right now it has so far been a pretty turbulent exit so far, and there has been a lot of uncertainty, and that may at the margin discourage other countries. But the one thing that isn't going to go away anytime soon is I think that markets will have to deal with an ongoing political risk premium. And there'll be a lot more focus on opinion polls, and in particular how you know, some of these anti-establishment or nationalist parties are doing in each poll. And I think, you know, it you know, as I'm sure you are, you know, I've been working in FX and rate markets for 20-25 years, and, you know, it's not often, in fact, that politics has driven markets in that period. But I get the sense that in the next 5 years that they will continue to do so.
The market will always turn to whatever's the next thing on the economic calendar, and that happens to be payrolls on Friday. To what extent is the market going to simply switch attention?
Oh, I would love that to be the case. Wouldn't that be great? I mean, I don't know about you, but the listeners must be so tired of the word Brexit. But so one thing I would say is that both the Bank of England and the Fed had and many organizations, international organizations, had highlighted what a risk Brexit posed to the outlook. So it therefore becomes quite difficult for them to backtrack on that. And you know, obviously, it has been a systemic event. But the interesting thing, I think, about the strength of the US economy is that, you know, so far there's no evidence of any economic contagion to the US. And even, you know, in Europe, obviously, we have some evidence of financial market stress. And you know, the ECB's systemic stress index has risen. European bank CDSs have risen. But much, much, much less so in the US. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, we know that the Fed pays a lot of attention to financial conditions, but financial conditions in the US have not deteriorated. And so, you know, if payrolls does pose some kind of a rebound, certainly inflation in the US is only going one way, and that is up from here. And so, you know, they've been afforded the luxury of ignoring the unemployment data because inflation was so benign. I think that will change in the second half of this year. And therefore, there is a, you know, wasn't that long ago that many Fed officials, in fact, Fed officials as a group, were warning that interest rate expectations in the US were too low and that the market was too complacent.
So we could be heading for a stronger dollar, and that might mean a weaker renminbi. And what did you make of the increasing depreciation of the renminbi, which has actually moved pretty much lower since Brexit?
Yes, that has been interesting because actually, you know, going back to, you know, the last time markets were systemic in part was because of a similar kind of move in the renminbi. And so, you know, it may well be that we're blaming all this on Brexit. In fact, actually, we should have been looking at China instead. I think what I would say about China is that with these online prices that we collect, actually, we don't just generate inflation estimates. We also generate a very large, think of it as a supersized Big Mac index where we compare the prices of many, many goods, not just a Big Mac. And we actually find that fair value for the renminbi is actually still above 7. And so, you know, what China is doing is that they're removing what is a competitive disadvantage for them, really. And so, you know, I don't think it'll get to 7 straight away, of course. But I think that, you know, we can expect ongoing depreciation from the Chinese renminbi, you know, going forward. And, you know, in part, what they're doing there is just catching up with the rest of the basket as well. There is an element of that that's going on there, that the, you know, dollar renminbi is adjusting relative to the renminbi against other currencies.
Okay, so we've successfully made the case for quarantining Brexit around the UK. Just my final question to you, Michael, is this. If that's the case, what does it mean for sterling if the rest of the world is not as worried as perhaps we thought it was about Brexit? Does it actually help the case for suggesting, well, therefore the risk to the UK and the risk to sterling is not as great, and therefore we won't see as much of a depreciation in the pound? Or actually, is the whole issue about quarantining means that you are on your own, it is your own self-induced mess, therefore you must suffer the consequences? What do you think is going to happen to sterling if we see the rest of the world allowing the UK to get on with it and not feeling the after effects?
I think if the slowdown is sort of limited, or as you say, quarantined to the UK, you know, we're going to go back to, I think, what was quite a familiar theme for currency and rate markets last year, which was one of rate divergence. Because I think, you know, if you go down the global panic route, everyone eases together. And actually, in that situation, the dollar probably still wins. But I think in the situation where this is, you know, more of a UK-centered event, first and foremost, then we're back to, you know, relative rate differentials driving further sterling weakness. But, you know, obviously a lot of that will depend on just how big the UK slowdown is and how much the Bank of England can meet market expectations of lower rates.
My thanks to Michael Metcalfe of State Street. To keep up to date with all the FX news on the FT, have a look at ft.com/markets. We will be back for the next instalment of Hard Currency, when we'll be discussing central bank reaction to Brexit, not least from the Bank of England. Join us again.
The latest episode of the Next 5 podcast is out now, and it's all about AI and creativity. I speak to Doug Eck, Senior Research Director at Google DeepMind.
Creativity is part and parcel of humanity.
YouTube creator Danny Vidari.
AI can give us humans new ideas.
And Neil Maiden, Professor of Digital Creativity at City University London.
AI creates a lot of opportunities. I think it's a great leveler.
Listen to the full episode of the Next 5 wherever you get your podcasts. Enjoy.
Next week. Goodbye.